It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, you have aligned to Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay as we break down his ballot measure that would ban private election grants. And later, we discuss a bill to eliminate race-based consideration in college scholarships, grants, and loans. Call in with a question or comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Eric Wimberger represents the 30th District in Green Bay. State Senator Wimberger, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
You have co-authored a constitutional amendment which would bar local communities from using private grant funds to administer elections. How do you want this legislation to change how Wisconsin conducts elections?
Well, I don't necessarily think there should be a change in the way anything is conducted. I guess just the method of payment. For all of our history, we've been doing it without private funds primarily, but in the last election cycle, there was some questions, and I think there's a bit of a slippery slope that is going to happen as a result.
Can you be more specific there? Because private grants, they've been credited with helping facilitate the 2020 election, that the most difficult and darkest days of the COVID pandemic. Does that mean Wisconsin wouldn't ever encounter this or need this form of disaster aid, if you want to call it that, again?
I would challenge you on the fact that places needed it. In my area here in the Green Bay area, the state help was actually refused, and in lieu of the state help, the private money was taken. And that was pretty much across the state. I don't think there was going to be any sort of problem, especially with the National Guard and their trained election advisors there, that they could have caused a serious problem if taken and organized. What's going to end up happening is you will have cities that take private money. And then depending on who controls the city, are going to decide where things happen. And it could be anything from where you do a route for the shuttle to the polls, or where there's going to be advertising. All these things might not be a direct sort of influence on a ballot, but certainly would put a thumb on the scale. And when we're talking about, statewide ballots nowadays being decided by 20 or 30,000 votes, those things could make a difference.
Democratic State Senator Mark Spreitzer says the private grants, they're needed because local clerks and municipalities often don't have enough money to do their jobs and carry out elections. If private grants were banned in Wisconsin, would you support increased funding to fill that funding gap?
Oh, sure. Whatever is needed to actually affect the implement the election, of course, that's important. I don't agree with Senator Spreitzer and his analysis, because if that were the fact that these localities needed the money, there would have been a challenge on the Voting Rights Act or any sort of other disenfranchisement. And those things, of course, never come, and they won't come, because the state actually does, and the localities do figure out how to implement the election.
Would you support federal funding for election administration, like ongoing funding from the federal government?
Sure, that's all fine. The issue is just simply that when you have, there's a distinction to be made between when you get a donation from a private entity to do advertising, say, hey, vote for so-and-so, versus the private money being commingled with the police powers of the government to implement something or another. And when it's that way, there's a double dark money type of a situation where you are actually using police powers. And that's not good. You do have to have that sort of nonpartisan or uniform arm's length distance from that private money. Otherwise, you will go back to the olden days where it was kind of like that, and you had ballot box stuffing and not much confidence in the vote.
We're talking about recent efforts to change Wisconsin election laws with State Senator Eric Wimberger, represents the 30th District in Green Bay. You can join the conversation, call in with the question or comments at 800-642-1234. I wonder if you could look to the future. Could constitutional amendments like this one, barring private grant funds to administer elections, is this a way for Republicans to get other types of legislation passed in the future?
I don't think that's necessarily true. And a constitutional amendment has to go through two sessions. So two different election cycles for the assembly, at least. And then it has to pass on a referendum statewide. So if the sentiment or the mood of the state is not there, it's not like it could turn the entire Constitution into a code. But there are some things that are very important and that need to be actually enshrined in the Constitution, and to keep this sort of influence out of something that's supposed to be non-political, so to speak, is very important.
On the theme of elections and voting related, State Assembly approved, about 20 of these bills Thursday. Around half of the bills received bipartisan co-sponsorship or Democratic committee votes. Which bills are the most important for the Senate to take up, in your opinion?
Regarding
these latest election and voting related bills that have passed through the assembly and they're on their way to the Senate.
I can tell you, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the assembly that never makes it to the Senate. I don't even keep track of it anymore. There's some 1,000 or 1,200 bills that happen every session, and a lot of them never actually cycle through the Senate. There's only a couple that actually get through.
Are there any in particular that relate to changes in how elections are administered that you really want to see become before your upper chamber?
Well, I think last week there was a vote for making ID, a photo ID required for all types of elections, and also that only citizens can vote in all elections. Right now, the citizenship test is only for federal elections or statewide elections, but there could be some local elections where non-citizens could still vote. And so that does need to be shored up a bit.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss referred articles of impeachment against Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf to a committee. Should Wolf be impeached?
I don't agree with the tactic being used, but I think Megan Wolf should not be in her job. The articles of impeachment, however, fall short largely in accusations. They're overly broad. And I was a criminal defense attorney prior to being in the Senate here. And the way they're written is unclear, and I'm not happy about the construction of the document. I would, whether she should be impeached, I guess that maybe there's a case to be made on some of this stuff, on one or two of these things. However, much of the document is about how she did things that the Elections Commission told her to do. And it's kind of like, darned if you do, darned if you don't at that point, because if she had not done what she was told to do by the Elections Commission, well, then she'd be subject to impeachment for failure to execute her job duties. So some of these things I don't think are very well thought through, but perhaps there's one or two. We'll see how that shakes out.
You have a line to Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay on proposals he backs. Call in with a question or comments about legislation, 800-642-1234. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay sits on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. We explore the proposals he's backing this floor session and what he seeks to get to Governor Tony Evers' desk in coming weeks. Call in at any point to ask a question. Share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You've written a bill that would eliminate race-based criteria for college scholarships, grants, and loans. The bill passed along party lines last week in the Assembly, now is with the Senate. Why should this be signed into law?
Well, I think society ought to shift its paradigm a bit, and I think this is more of a response to that paradigm shift than actually, trying to induce something. People simply don't believe anymore that a particular person, based on their immutable characteristics, has a particular background or personality type. So to say that somebody needs something based on their skin color, for instance, or gender, just is an antiquated way to think about it. Now, you may say, well, there's all these disparate impacts or disproportionality. If you take away the concept of the immutable characteristic and then just simply talk about whether they're disadvantaged in one way or another, then what you're talking about is whether someone has a disadvantage. If there's a disparate impact in society, then the disadvantage status will also be applied disparately, and then it'll kind of even out, and there'll be a disproportionate benefit to those based on whatever category. But the focus would be on the actual disadvantaged status rather than saying automatically that because you're X, you have a disadvantage.
How do you define disadvantaged status or disadvantaged students in your legislation?
Well, there's an amendment on the Assembly floor I have to take a look at yet, but originally, it would be left largely up to the institutions as long as the concept of race were left out of it. But the general idea, it would be largely economic.
Largely economic.
Or social.
Okay. Yeah. Are you concerned with how this legislation could affect students of color in Wisconsin?
Concerned about it? No, I think it will. It will separate concepts of a presumption someone is disadvantaged based on skin color, and someone will be able to walk into a room and say, I'm your peer.
Why do you think it's important for lawmakers to involve themselves in higher education matters like this that are usually left up to faculty, left up to administrators to manage?
In this day and age, I guess there's concepts of critical race theories and critical gender theories going on. In generations past, you would have institutions discriminating, for instance, against women, presuming that they couldn't do math or engineering. And the government does have to step in from time to time in order to stop institutions from discriminating in that way. Now, there's really no question that it's discrimination. It's just a question of whether it's appropriate under the rubric that the U.S. Supreme Court permitted under the case of Bakke and its progeny. But I think the time has come where most people nowadays really don't consider race in their calculus, and this concept of implicit bias needs to kind of go the way that other paradigms have gone in the past.
We're looking at legislative priorities with State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay, represents the 30th District. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Pete in Eau Claire. Pete, hi. What would you like to ask?
Hi, good morning. I'm curious about what the state senator thinks that this private funding money is being spent on. I mean, the way he's trying to spin it is that that these groups are buying votes when they're really just helping to facilitate the ability for people to access voting easier, especially during 2020 and COVID, when they helped to finance money for drop boxes and different kinds of education. These are things that help people vote, and that's what they're afraid of, is that they don't want people to vote. So does he think that it's that they're buying votes?
State Senator Eric Wimberger, go ahead.
Well, thanks for the question. I think it would be best asked rhetorically like this. Would you be okay if there was just this assistance to vote in places that had a statistical voting trend of 60% Republican or higher? And if that was just helping people to vote, well, why would you oppose that? Because it's just helping people to vote. It wouldn't have any effect on the election at all. And when you ask that question that way of let's just help people vote only in places where there's a particular voting trend, then you start to realize, well, wait a minute, this might actually tip the scales a little bit. So helping people to vote is not the point. It's just that state money ought to be used to help people to vote and not supplemented by a private organization that might boost a particular vote percentage out in particular areas. In Green Bay, the money was spent on a voting team, what they called advisory team, or they had people there from New York primarily to administer the election. And it got to the point where the clerk actually resigned, and the person who ran the election that year in the city of Green Bay proper was actually a voting team from New York. And those sorts of things aren't exactly a direct buy of the election of voters. And there's no accusation that there are any votes changed at this point in time. However, when you pile in a bunch of money for advertising, you can actually target, and when it's disproportionately, done, you can actually increase the voter turnout. And if you give it directly to a particular city with a particular trend, it would bolster that sort of turnout in comparison to other areas.
I want to jump in here so we have time to discuss toxic PFAS chemicals.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the Senate Natural Resources and Energy Committee passed a bill you authored to address PFAS pollution. But the legislation would create several limitations for the State Department of Natural Resources. Why limit the actions of the DNR in remediating PFAS contamination?
This is a really great thing for everybody, and I hope that the governor comes around from what his comments were previously. It's a great opportunity for him to really help out. There's only one type of limitation on the DNR in the legislation, and that's to limit the DNR's ability to order innocent landowners into remediation. So if you're next to an airport or a farm that took biosolids with PFAS in it, or next to an industry that has PFAS in the ground, and here's a pollution plume migrating through the ground from your property into your property, through your property, into somebody else's property, that makes you an emitter by definition. And if you're an emitter, you'll be subject to DNR remediation orders. Now, you might not actually be ordered into remediation because there's such a massive amount of property, but you're probably, and when you disclose it on your property disclosure, if you try to sell your house, you'll be have to put at the bottom there, yeah, my property, it emits a hazardous substance, and the DNR pinky swears that they probably won't order you to remediation, but it still reserves that authority. Your property value is going to be zero. So the important thing here is just that if you're an innocent landowner and you have a pollution plume running through your property, that you won't be subject to remediation orders and test wells and all these kinds of things at your expense, as long as you let the DNR go onto the property at state expense. So it's not a total denial of DNR authority. It's just that as long as you let the DNR come and poke around on your land and figure out where things are, feel free to test, feel free to examine your property and figure out what's going on for the best of your health. And you don't have to make that that very difficult dilemma of if I test, now all of a sudden I find out my property's emitting and I'm going to be subject to remediation orders. This makes it so there's everybody can be safe and their property value is restored.
State Senator Wimberger, thank you for joining us.
You bet.
State Senator Eric Wimberger represents the 30th District in Green Bay. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We talk with the state's top election official as voting and election administration proposals move through the Capitol and voting-related constitutional amendments are set to go on the ballot next year. You can join the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Megan Wolf is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Megan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Good morning. Let's turn to these constitutional amendments. The Senate and Assembly both advanced amendments to the Constitution involving elections that voters will have say on in April. If the amendments are ultimately approved, how would voting in Wisconsin change?
Well, you know, first of all, as the state's nonpartisan chief election official, I don't take a position on things like legislation. And so it'll really be up to the voters of Wisconsin to decide if these are what they'd like to implement. From our perspective, the two amendments would involve solidifying the photo ID as part of our state's constitution. That's been in place since 2012. There has been some litigation, but it does seem like something that's very well established here in the state of Wisconsin at this point. And then, you know, I'm sure there'll be some questions about the funding and resources from third parties. But again, you know, our job is just to implement the law, in this case, to implement whatever the voters of Wisconsin decide.
In terms of third-party private grants, what impact would that have in administering state elections if those types of dollars would not be there?
Right. So, you know, that is really a municipal level decision. So in 2020, we saw that some local governments, so be it their city council, their town boards, made decisions to engage with grant programs to fund some of their election-related programs. And so, you know, this would continue to be something that is discussed and ultimately decided how it would be funded at the municipal level. At the state of Wisconsin, we do provide some federal grants. So Congress will pass funding for election security at the federal level, and they provide it to states. And then here in the state of Wisconsin, we do give the majority of that grant funding to our local election jurisdictions. One of the really tricky things is that in the state of Wisconsin, we have the most decentralized election system in the entire country. We have 1,850 cities, towns, and villages. And so it can be challenging to find ways to fund almost 2,000 local jurisdictions in a meaningful way to be able to spread across that federal funding. So, you know, making up that gap will continue to be something that our municipal governments will need to decide on how to budget for that in the future.
In deciding on how to budget for that in the future, in general, do local municipalities have adequate state funding to administer elections?
Oh, I think that our local jurisdictions could always use additional state funding to fund elections. Elections are expensive. Elections require a very significant workforce. In a general election, you're going to have almost 40,000 poll workers in the state of Wisconsin because we have almost 4,000 polling places, and all of those need to be staffed on election day. And then before election day, we have in-person absentee voting, all of the many things that happen before election day, after election day, all those things need to be staffed. There's things like our tabulating equipment. So in some small jurisdictions, they might not have tabulators, but they have to have things like accessible voting equipment. And all of that equipment, you know, it needs to be replaced from time to time. So those are very expensive things that have to happen. We have absentee voting, postage that's part of that process. And so there is always a need for additional sustainable funding for our local governments to be able to make sure that they can keep pace with the changing demands in election administration.
Do you hear any concerns from clerks about having adequate staffing of elections in the future?
So we have had initiatives in the past to try to recruit poll workers across the state. We are hearing that in terms of poll workers, that local election jurisdictions do feel that they have adequate staffing levels. Now, that's not to say if you're interested, please, by all means, contact your local clerk and talk to them about whether or not they need poll workers. I think they'd always be glad to have those conversations. We have seen that the political parties, so the Republican and Democratic parties, they are producing lists of poll workers. And those poll workers that come from the party list do have to be chosen first in the jurisdictions. And so we are seeing larger lists than we have in the past, which does help to be able to staff some of those polling places. Now, in terms of clerks' offices and staffing those other important processes around Election Day, I think that can be a little more challenging, especially in small townships. We have 1,200 plus townships in the state of Wisconsin, and these are really small jurisdictions where it can be really difficult for them to find people to fill these positions.
We're talking about election and voting related proposals and election administration with Megan Wolf, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. The Assembly passed a bill that could allow early votes to be processed the day before Election Day. It now heads to the Senate. And if enacted, how could this bill affect how clerks tally elections?
So it's been really encouraging to see all of the local election officials that have been able to voice their opinion about these bills and to see that they have bipartisan support. I think that's really positive to see everyone come together to look to solve an issue. And the issue we have here is that absentee voting has become an increasingly popular way for Wisconsin voters to cast their ballot. Before 2020, we typically saw about 6% of voters in Wisconsin were utilizing absentee by mail. That number is now much higher. In 2020, it was higher than 60% of voters utilizing that process. It does seem to be leveling off a little bit. But with absentee votes, we're one of the few states in the country that does not allow processing of those absentee ballots before the polls open on Election Day. And so that makes it really challenging for places to manage a polling place and process those absentee ballots all in one day. And so this would allow clerks additional time to start that processing. It would still be public, which I think is really important to say and repeat over again, is it will be a public process still where the public can still observe those absentee ballots as they're being pre-processed. And the totals would not be able to be released. The clerks wouldn't even be able to have access to that through their tabulation equipment. And so it really just allows them additional time to be able to do the careful work that's required as they process those absentee ballots and allow them that additional time so that we can get the unofficial totals quicker, which is something that, you know, we certainly see the public desires is to be able to have those unofficial totals earlier after the election concludes.
Let's take a call now. Jane in Suamico has a question. Jane, hi.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I would ask to have some clarification. I understand there is a commission over the Wisconsin Election Commission, and that commission advises or creates rules for the Wisconsin Election Commission, and it's something people don't talk about very often, and there seems to be a lot of confusion about it, especially as it relates to advice about giving clerks advice or different ways what the Wisconsin Election Commission can do. Can she speak to that, please?
Jane, thank you. Megan Wolf, go ahead.
Yeah, oh, excellent question. And you're right. I find that a lot of people do not understand our model. So the Wisconsin Elections Commission is a 6-member bipartisan commission. So we have 3 Republican commissioners and 3 Democratic commissioners. And they meet in public meetings to decide how to implement election laws. And so any decision that you've heard about in terms of how an election law has been implemented, sometimes people like those decisions, sometimes people do not, those were made by the 6-member commission in an open public meeting. If you'd like to see when the commission's going to meet, if you'd like to see what's going to be on their agenda, if you'd like to watch past meetings and view the minutes, you can go to elections.wi.gov, and you can see the commission's schedule. It's a really unique process, and it allows for a lot of transparency. I'm the administrator of the commission. I'm nonpartisan by law. I don't have a vote on the commission. My job is just to implement the directives of that bipartisan commission. They need 4 votes to be able to implement a directive, and then they give me that directive to implement. I don't have a say, an opinion, or a vote on the commission. And so a lot of times that's misunderstood. You know, what is my role on the commission? And I don't have a vote. I just implement that bipartisan commission's directive. All of our commissioners are also appointed by our legislative leadership. And so those are legislative appointees that serve on the commission.
We examine election administration ahead of 2024 with Megan Wolf serving as Wisconsin's top elections official. Call in with a question. Share your comments. 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Wisconsin's chief election official as a raft of voting and election administration proposals move through the Capitol. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts at any point. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Megan Wolf is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Let's go to Saeed in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm wondering about mail-in ballots. Seeing as such a large percentage of our state is now voting absentee, I'm wondering if ballots are mailed in a mass mailing fashion, even to those who have not requested one, or are those only mailed into people who ask for it? And the reason I'm asking the question is because I have a concern about the significant opportunity for errors if we do mass mailings.
Saeed, thank you. Saeed, thank you. Megan Wolf, go ahead.
Really great questions this morning. So we do not mass mail ballots here in the state of Wisconsin. So when you request an absentee ballot, first and foremost, you have to be a registered voter. So when you make your request, you make your request in writing, you have to provide a photo ID, and that absentee ballot request goes to your municipal clerk. So if you live in a small township, it goes to your town clerk. If you live in a village, in a city, it goes to your clerk. Your clerk reviews your absentee ballot request and your photo ID. They then look at the eligible voter list. If you're not on the eligible voter list, if you're not registered to vote, then they cannot issue you a ballot. But it's happening in every single community. And so if your clerk gets your absentee request, They see you've provided everything that's required by law. They see that you're registered to vote and there's not other indicators that you're ineligible, then they mail you an absentee ballot. And that's coming from your municipal clerk. It doesn't come from the state. It only comes to you if you've requested it and if your clerk has determined you're eligible. When that ballot comes back, your clerk has to again check that ballot into the system. So if they receive a ballot back and they go to check it in and they see you never asked for it or you're not registered to vote, then that cannot be counted. And so it's a very localized process here in the state of Wisconsin that has 1,850 municipal clerks that are safeguarding that process and ensure that only eligible voters in their community receive an absentee ballot and that only eligible voters in their community can have an absentee ballot counted. Another cool thing about absentee voting is your ballot goes to your polling place and it's counted on election day where your name and your address are read, just like you're at the polls. And so it's part of that public process. And it's part of that process that if somebody did have reliable information that a voter wasn't eligible to have their vote counted, it could be challenged as part of that public process. So a lot of safeguards in place both before, during, and even after election day to ensure that only eligible voters' votes are counted.
I want to turn to some recent security issues with news reports in states like California, Georgia, Nevada, Oregon have received suspicious packages in the mail. Some have been found to contain fentanyl. How are you monitoring threats here in Wisconsin with Wisconsin election officials?
Yeah, so we monitor what's happening across the country when it comes to election administration. And so when we heard that in other states that there were these suspicious, threatening packages or mail deliveries, we wanted to make sure that our clerks knew about that, even though this wasn't a threat specific to Wisconsin. So we have no reason to believe that Wisconsin is going to be targeted in something like this, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be incredibly prepared for this type of situation. And so as soon as we learned about this, we talked with our state and our federal law enforcement partners, and we put together best practices for opening mail, for staying safe when processing mail, and we sent those to our local election clerks. And so we have, again, we have no reason to believe that Wisconsin will be a target of this type of activity. That being said, every day election officials are practicing our contingencies. We're thinking about what would happen if there were an emergency. We're thinking about how to keep our election personnel safe during the election cycle. And so, you know, it's really unfortunate that these things occurred in other states. Here in Wisconsin, it allowed us an opportunity to do some contingency planning and make sure we're ready if this kind of threat should arise in the future.
Are these best practices actual changes to how mail is opened at local election offices?
I don't know that they're necessarily changes. I think in a lot of places, they've been doing many of these things going forward. So just some common sense things when it comes to analyzing the mail that comes in, looking for things that may look unusual, working with your law enforcement if you have questions or concerns to address things that may look suspicious. And so I think a lot of these things are best practices that clerks are already using, offices like ours are already using. But it's always good, again, to think about what will we do in an emergency? Are our plans solid? Do we have new personnel in the office that hasn't been trained on these things that you need to make sure that they understand what our process is for safely processing mail? And so I think it's really more of an opportunity to reinforce practices that are most likely already in place in our local communities.
Talking about issues that could face voters next year with Megan Wolf, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. You can call in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Last week, the Assembly passed a bill that would regulate the establishment of polling locations. Representative Clinton Anderson of Beloit voted against the bill, arguing that it would make closing polling locations easier. Will this proposal make closing polling locations more difficult or easier?
Well, I think that determining how many polling places can be used is always going to be a municipal level decision. And so I think this proposal, from my vantage point, just changes the way that those emergency type changes would be made and how a municipal government would make those changes. So I don't know if it's easier or harder necessarily. I think it's just sort of adjusting the process for when those types of changes can be made and how a municipal governing body would be involved in making that decision.
Last week, the Assembly declined to vote on whether to impeach you despite pressure from Republicans and former President Donald Trump. Are you able to focus on your work through all of the talk of impeachment?
You know, I'm really hopeful that we will be able to return to the important work that's in front of us. As election officials, the election calendar for the 2024 cycle, it really kicks off on December 1st of this year. And there's an election-related deadline every day between December 1st of 2023 and January of 2025. And so we have important work to do. And I'm really hopeful that we've now turned a corner and we'll be able to get back to focusing on that important work at hand. And I also think conversations like this morning, you know, the discussion about what is the Wisconsin Elections Commission, what is my role, is something I'm going to continue to have, because I think there's a lot of confusion. And unfortunately, people have blamed me for decisions that I had no involvement in making. And so I'm really hoping that, you know, if anything good comes from this process, it's that we've provided that additional clarity so people better understand how decisions are made, how they're public decisions, how they can even provide input to the commission, and what my role is to implement those directives of the commission.
In our last moments together, where does the confusion come from in your analysis?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I'm not exactly sure. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Wisconsin has a different model. In a lot of other states, you might have a single elected partisan official that's implementing directives about elections unilaterally, you know, behind a closed door. Here in Wisconsin, we've got this six-member bipartisan commission. They need four votes to be able to implement a directive. And then I carry out their directives. I don't have a vote. And I think for some people, that can be a difficult concept. They want a single person to blame if they have a grievance. And so I think often I get scapegoated in that role of people attributing blame to me, when in reality, you know, Wisconsin's election system is working just as it was designed and intended by our lawmakers. We have a six-member bipartisan commission. They meet in public. They make decisions in a bipartisan way, and I implement their directives. And so I think we just need to continue to have those conversations.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Megan Wolf is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.